I was not even aware of this, but apparently they got a minimum wage hike as a part of Brandon Johnson's agenda over in Chicago. Take a look.
The Federal Reserve released a new report this week that finds low-income workers are worse off than before the pandemic. Today in Washington, Mayor Brandon Johnson's One Fair Wage ordinance is being praised as a way out of poverty.
When the cost of getting to work costs you more than what you earn when you get there, it's a very rational economic decision to say no to that job.
Brandon Johnson in D.C. for the Conference of Mayors, being hailed today for his passage this past fall of the One Fair Wage Ordinance, which raises the minimum wage for tipped workers in Chicago by 8% per year over the next 5 years.
By increasing these wages, we are not only eliminating the reliance on tips to make a decent living, we are also working to address the restaurant industry's staffing crisis.
Mayors from several battleground states on hand vowing to follow Chicago's lead, along with business leaders who have heard the struggles from their younger workers, particularly in the restaurant industry.
It is one of the last industries that is still behind the times, still relies on the goodwill of a customer walking through the door, and whether they have a little bit of change in their pocket, they could leave for the worker.
Johnson believes raising the minimum wage in battleground states is a key to victory in this election year.
Workers are voters, and with a new generation of voters coming to the polls, we must listen to and address the challenges and concerns that they are raising.
Maybe you should listen to the concerns that they're raising as far as continuing to embrace and fund this migrant crisis instead of disassociating yourself with being a sanctuary city, because those type of people are voters also. Oh, hold on. Let me switch my microphone. We good? All right, cool. So, yeah, Brandon Johnson is being hailed, heralded, loved, embraced, and being championed as a mayor of the future because of his dedication to make sure that he's raising a minimum wage and continuing to destroy the fabric of his state. So, that's Brandon Johnson. Anyways, continuing on, Ohio is joining along with other states and banning minor gender care for trans people. Take a look, ladies and gentlemen.
We've got breaking news. The Ohio Senate just voted to override the governor's veto of a bill that will restrict medical care for transgender minors. The bill will also block transgender girls from playing in female sports. NBC News correspondent Maggie Vespa is following the latest for us. So, Maggie, what kind of impact will this bill have, and when is it going into effect?
Yeah, so as you pointed out, Sinclair, this is kind of a two-pronged bill. It's a combination of bills that were introduced separately and then combined, passing with a supermajority in the Senate and the House, then vetoed by the governor, and they have now overridden that veto. So in 90 days, when this goes into effect, essentially this spring, this will prevent minors from getting any kind of gender-affirming care. That includes hormone blockers, therapy, those kinds of things. And it will also prevent girls and women from, transgender girls and women, I should say, from competing on high school and collegiate athletic teams, basically women's sports in the state of Ohio. This vote came today after we heard dozens of lawmakers on both sides of the issue effectively stand up and say why they were going to vote the way they did. Here are two examples of what we just heard. Take a listen.
Despite what the liberals say, gender is not assigned at birth, but rather from the moment of conception, you are either male or you are female. And there is no such thing as gender-affirming care.
I find it very disconcerting that we stand here and make bold statements and not really understand or accept the fact that someone has their own autonomy and being able to make choices about their own medical care or how they want to be seen in this world.
Now, we should point out Ohio's governor, if you're keeping track, is a Republican, Mike DeWine. He had vetoed that bill not because he's against banning gender-affirming care of any sort. He basically said he drew the line at surgery, and he has since introduced his own executive order banning surgery for minors. Now this bill takes care of all kinds of gender-affirming care.
So, me personally, sometimes I would like to identify as a turtle and go into my shell. Other times I would like to identify as a billionaire and go spend a bunch of money and buy a big mansion. But guess what? Reality then sets in and says, Anton, guess what you are? You are what you are based off of what you are and what God assigned for you to be. And that's just the end of the conversation. It's just the facts. I am not personally a person that believes that a man should be able to, or a biological male should ever be able to, participate in women's sports. I don't even know where they're getting these phrases from. Gender affirming care. You know that words mean things, right? And I don't have to affirm what I don't believe in. And we're not going to continue to run up the check and spend money and waste legislation dollars on things that, in my opinion, that is very black and white, but for some reason our delusion and the fact that we keep letting all of these people that don't know any better get the microphone and they determine what's happening in our laws, our schools, our sports, and even when our what's happening in the surgery room, to have children, to force children, to put children in a position to justify how they feel before they've even gotten to the age to where their brain is fully developed, but we making permanent decisions on their bodies and we calling it gender affirming care is crazy to me. It's absolutely crazy to me. So for whatever reason, I guess I'm in the minority and that I'm delusional in this world and that people can do whatever they want to do when they want to do it. And we just supposed to believe them just because they said it. And so just because you identify as a black man and you a white woman, I'm supposed to actually believe that. Where do you draw the line? Can you change your race? Can you change your culture? Can you change? Is it just gender? So shout out to Ohio, not necessarily to the governor of Ohio, but shout out to Ohio for standing on business. And then last but not least, as indicated in the last quick hits, Alabama, because we were anticipating it happened, but it actually happened yesterday afternoon. Alabama became the first state with nitro asphyxiation as a part of their death penalty and putting a man away that obviously had been on death row for the last 35 years and they had botched it the first time. And so they needed to get it done this time. That happened yesterday and it's setting off a wave of different descriptions and ways and emotions and all of that. And so I got a couple of different clips for you guys that describe what it was like and whether or not people are agreeing or disagreeing with this way to put somebody away. Take a look, this first one.
Following the flow of nitrogen gas, Kenneth Smith laid on the gurney and shook for about 2 minutes, shaking and writhing on that gurney. The gurney did move several times there. Following that shaking on the gurney, there were several minutes, about between 5 and 7 minutes, according to media witnesses, of heavy breathing on the gurney. Several minutes later, a correctional officer did walk up to Kenneth Smith and appear to look over at his face. He did not touch Kenneth Smith or actually do anything that media witnesses were able to see to Kenneth Smith, but he did lean over and look at him for several minutes before walking back to the wall to return to his post there. At about 8:08, movement appeared to stop, and there was no perceptible breathing from Kenneth Smith. The curtains to the execution viewing room closed at 8:15 p.m. Central Time, and Governor Ivey pronounced death at 8:25 Central Time. One thing that Kenneth Smith's attorneys were very afraid of is that he might vomit into the mask. He did not show any signs of vomiting there into the mask. Also, the Alabama Attorney General's office had said in prior court filings that they expected him to lose consciousness pretty quickly after that gas began to flow, but media witnesses saw that Ken Smith appeared to be conscious for several minutes after that gas began to flow, again, before he proceeded to shake and writhe on that gurney for about 2 minutes. Again, that 2 minutes of shaking and writhing on the gurney was followed by about 5 to 7 minutes of heavy breathing.
So one of the things that they're saying is that he was trying to hold his breath. That's one of them. Because I guess the way that it happened is this: a mask that was attached to his face. It caused him to lose consciousness. And then obviously it takes him and puts him out of his misery. His spiritual leader had a different take and a completely different perception of what happened. Because they say that his body shook for like a couple minutes after they started administering it again, which nobody really knows whether he was really trying to hold his breath or not. But then they're also saying in different reports that I read across different sites that it was involuntary body movement after he was already put to sleep. Right. So his spiritual leader and one of his great friends had a completely different take on what happened. Take a look to his description of it. We're not going to play the full description because it's longer than I want it to be. But take a look at his description of it and y'all tell me what y'all think.
I know witnessed this. I think that anybody that witnessed this knows that we didn't see someone go unconscious in 2 or 3 seconds. We didn't see somebody go unconscious in 30 seconds. What we saw was minutes of someone struggling for their life. We saw minutes of someone heaving back and forth. We saw spit. We saw all sorts of stuff from his mouth develop on the mask. We saw this mask tied to the gurney and him ripping his head forward over and over and over again. And we also saw correction officials in the room who were visibly surprised at how bad this thing went. I know that Commissioner Hamm, I know that ADOC is going to come out here and say, well, this is what we thought was going to happen. Look at their court filings. This is not what they thought was going to happen. Kenny Smith was by no means a perfect person. And I think it is absolutely disgusting that the state of Alabama has allowed this moment to overshadow the memory of Elizabeth Stinnett.
So obviously we knew that this was going to happen, as far as there was going to be a lot of differing opinions on what's right, what's wrong, what's humane, what's not. I don't have an opinion on it either way. I haven't really delved into what my thoughts would be with regard to that, because I guess it's not something that's ever really hit home. But in a general sense, there is a lot of debate on the different methods and this particular method that they use in order to take the dude out. Again, he was getting 3 hots and a cot for over 35 years after he was sentenced. I believe he was sentenced back in the 80s. They say 1988 is when he was sentenced. So he lived practically a full life, well beyond whoever it was the victim was. And even a family. I seen a video of the family saying that they have forgiven him because they wanted to be more Christ-like. So this is a debate that will continue to rage on. It's never going to stop. It's been happening since I can remember.